Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
What's the best way to attract tourists to Superior and Duluth?
Authentic Duluth. Plan your getaway now.
As both cities reevaluate their tourism programs, we'll speak with the experts. Plus,
you just can't stop thinking.
The Twin Ports celebrate sobriety.
You might go back to drinking.
With the first ever concert for recovery.
All those things you used to do to make you feel all right.
Those stories and the regional news and review after this.
Ain't no way around it. And you can feel it coming. Just like before, it's crying time again.
News and issues from a superior point of view.
What's the best way to attract tourists to Superior and Duluth?
Authentic Duluth. Plan your getaway now.
As both cities reevaluate their tourism programs, we'll speak with the experts. Plus,
you just can't stop thinking.
The Twin Ports celebrate sobriety.
You might go back to drinking.
With the first ever concert for recovery.
All those things you used to do to make you feel all right.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We all know we live in a beautiful area, and it's something we brag about to people everywhere, especially when they ask, why do we put up with the 20 below? Well, telling the story of our area and all it has to offer has long been the bailiwick of two tourism groups, Travel Superior, an arm of the Superior Douglas County Chamber of Commerce, and Visit Duluth on the other side of the bay. Both groups are supported with tax dollars by their respective city governments, and recently both cities have begun to rethink that. The city of Duluth broke from its long-standing support of Visit Duluth to contract with Belmont Partners, a Twin Cities area private firm, to handle the bulk of its marketing. And Superior is mulling creating a city commission to manage its efforts instead of Travel Superior. Both cities say they have the best interests in mind, but what's the best practice? Here to discuss that are two experts in the field. Javad Tolson, professor of tourism studies and management at the George Washington University School of Business in Washington, D.C., and Selini Matus, executive director at the George Washington University International Institute of Tourism Studies. Welcome to Simply Superior, Javad and Selini.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you, Robin.
So the main question here, at least in our area, is control. Should tourism be handled locally or outsourced to a winning bidder, as Duluth is doing, or can it be too local with the city commission, as Superior is leaning toward?
Great question. First, when you think of local destination marketing organizations like Visit Duluth, it is general practice throughout the U.S., that these local destination management organizations often outsource a portion of their marketing. However, in this case, it's a bigger decision. It's a decision in which Duluth outsourced the entire sort of marketing program. As we all know, with any type of marketing effort, it is most effective when it is driven by the locals. The local experts who live in that place, who know that place well. And so there are ways of ensuring that there is a greater involvement of Visit Duluth in really sort of shaping the direction of that and enhancing its capacity over time by working in collaboration with a firm like the one that has been selected in this case to help with marketing. In many cases recently, you know, different municipalities have begun to think about tourism more broadly. I think COVID has shown a spotlight on how tourism plays an important role in building local economies. And so now more than ever, these destinations need these destination marketing organizations to not only market the place or promote the place, but to also serve as destination managers that are bringing sort of stakeholder groups together, all the public entities, private sector, uniting them and guiding the industry under a shared vision for recovery of tourism and hospitality, so that there's more than just advertising or the key elements of marketing needed to ensure that we get back on track because of the jobs created by tourism and the important role that it plays in local economies. So, you know, this need to look more broadly at tourism is triggering many municipalities to revisit the structures that they have in place for tourism.
And I think I hear you saying that local control and outsourcing of specific marketing initiatives, like the commercials you mentioned, are not necessarily mutually exclusive. You can do both, get the expertise of a Belmont Partners without necessarily cutting out a Visit Duluth. Javad, your commentary on that?
Indeed, I agree with Selani's argument and statement. If you would like to empower local community, we need to give more resources to local community. Outsourcing is not totally wrong idea, but you know what portion of the packages you are outsourcing, that is important. I think if you want to, as I underline, empowering local community, we should work with the community, not to work for the community. Outsourcing means that we will work for the community. This is a small distinction, but has a big implication in practice. So we need to bring more expertise, more expert to the local community, and those experts should live with the local community. So in that way, we can help the local community, local development, at a better level.
We are speaking with Javad Tilson, Professor of Tourism Studies and Management at the George Washington University School of Business in Washington, D.C., and Selene Matus, Executive Director at the George Washington University International Institute of Tourism Studies. We're talking about the tourism efforts in Duluth and Superior, and let's talk about Superiors. Selene, I've been portraying it, and you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, that Superior is going in sort of the opposite direction that the City Council of Duluth is going, whereas instead of outsourcing to a private entity, they're going from a nonprofit, or they're considering going from a nonprofit, Travel Superior, to yet another governmental body, a commission that would be part of the city. On the one hand, it does answer Javad's concern about having local control or local participation, or certainly local people. On the other hand, is it too insular?
Yeah, that's a great question. I will say that this is a very common model throughout the U.S. The commissions, like let's say this commission that Superior is looking to set up, for instance, the board itself is usually public-private. It will have, I would guess, significant representation from private sector, which means that that's one way that the public sector shares, you know, its responsibilities for overseeing what is actually happening. So another example, I'll use another beautiful place, Jackson Hole in Teton County. Very sort of similar because of the types of experiences, right, that are so great. It's outdoors. It's outdoor and recreation, all these wonderful experiences out in nature.
And I think they have 20 below two, right?
right. Some of similar characteristics for sure. And in the case of Jackson Hole, they recently established the Jackson Hole Travel and Tourism Board that, you know, really oversees, similar to what this proposed commission in Superior would be doing. And then their Chamber of Commerce, which is equivalent in this case to Travel Superior, focuses primarily on the provisioning of information to visitors, among other things. So they do sort of work hand in hand with the Jackson Hole Travel and Tourism Board, but the board keeps a broader view on things. And I think this is, you know, this sort of shift to looking at the broader array of functions that are needed to ensure that tourism is really sort of delivering well on the promises that it can have to a community, which goes beyond just the economic impacts, by the way, to support culture and nature and all the important attractions and sites in these places. And so in this case, what has occurred is that broader commission or board is starting to look not only at marketing, which is squarely within its mandate, but also development and management. And it recently is commissioning the first destination management plan for Jackson Hole and Teton County with the vision and recognition that while marketing is important, there are some real important issues that they're encountering in regards to tourism, like the need to diversify tourism products, engage the wider community, et cetera, that they would like to start tackling.
And when you say that, I'm thinking of things like, locals who interact with tourists or don't interact with them, who may be complaining about tourism, right? Because it brings so much traffic to a particular area or something like that. So I'm beginning to get it, what both of you are talking about in terms of management, right? Marketing may be wonderful. We could run a really great commercial or a really bad one that works and get all kinds of people up here, but that doesn't make everybody happy if they're driving on my block or sitting in front of my house making loud noises, in their car radio.
Right. Or I can't access like the ski run because it's just overrun, at a particular time by tourists. And so, yes.
Right. Yeah, right. All tourists are doing
excellent
it.
Point,
and the locals
Robin.
Can't
excellent
do it.
Point.
We are speaking with Javat Tolson, professor of tourism studies and management at the George Washington University School of Business, and Selene Matus, who is the executive director of the George Washington University International Institute of Tourism Studies. One area I am familiar with in this whole tourism discussion is that we run commercials in the Twin Cities that are targeted toward Twin Cityans to come up to Duluth. The weather has a lot to do with this. If it's 90 degrees in the Twin Cities, it's usually 80 degrees in Duluth. And that's the message you want to tell people, because that means, hey, you can cool off up in the air-conditioned city by Lake Superior. Here's one of those commercials from a few years ago produced by Visit Duluth.
Authentic moments. Authentic memories. Authentic Duluth. Plan your getaway now.
So that was a TV commercial, which I have to say I find a bit less hokey than the radio commercials. But regardless of how annoying I may have found them, maybe they work. So the question would be, maybe Belmont Partners has a better idea of what works and what doesn't. But I think I hear you saying that destination management is much, much more than just buying an ad on
the
radio.
Yeah, if you say marketing, just bringing more tourists and earning more tourist dollar. But this is really a very myopic approach, particularly under the current crisis condition. Any organization shouldn't make strategic decision under the current crisis of COVID. Unless that's an emergency issue. This is extremely important. This is one of the most important principles of crisis management. Decision under crisis condition may not be rational due to the various factors such as high level of uncertainty and the non-availability of reliable data. This is very important. Is there any emergency? Yes, we need to, if we would like to save some life, definitely, we need to take action. We cannot wait. But
right.
For the other thing, we cannot see what will happen next year. So under these conditions, any contract may not reflect the reality. This is the issue I would like to underline.
Well, and frankly, I'm glad you did, because This, combined to what we just said about management, is becoming crystal clear to me. The behaviors of both our local people and our tourists are far, far different under COVID than they are under normal times. So maybe we don't go to the ski jump because someone, you know, had COVID there or something. You know, like, I don't know how that could happen, but it could happen. And so maybe it's more available for tourists, but that's just temporary. Or there's a, you know, we could go forever and talk about restaurants, right? And so maybe tourists are finding, ooh, look at all these open restaurants. Well, that's because our locals aren't going there, and that's because of COVID.
Robin, you know, I should say that, you know, I think a destination marketing organization should transform themselves from marketing to the management under the COVID condition. Mm-hmm. Under the COVID condition, we need more management rather than more marketing. Of course, by more management doesn't mean ignoring marketing, but including marketing. When we say destination management, marketing is only one function. So therefore, right, we need more management issue, particularly under the, you know, COVID condition, you know, like social distancing, you know, controlling over tourism, you know, how many tourists are over tourism, you know, the concept itself, you know, it changed. In the past, over tourism is different. Now we, by taking into the account new social distancing, you know, let's say principle, we don't mm-hmm. know. We need to define many things. We need to redefine many concepts. Therefore, we need more management. You know, we need to invest more in management rather than in marketing.
Your point is crystal clear, and I have to say, I never knew the term over-tourism, although I've heard no end of locals complaining about too many tourists, so I hope our officials are thinking about that too. Seleni, any last thoughts?
I would just like to say, you know, that this sort of pivot to consider management alongside marketing is really picking up steam. I gave the example of how Jackson Hole is considering its first, you know, tourism destination management plan. Oregon and Colorado, Hawaii are other states that have achieved great progress in this regard as well. Oregon is organized into different regions, for instance, and Travel Oregon at the state level supports these regional destination management organizations, and it's M for management in their case, and that then work with the local level destination marketing organizations like the Travel Superiors or Visit Duluth, for instance. And by really establishing these new structures from the state level through to the local level, there is the sort of retooling and the upskilling needed at each level to be able to do a better job, to tune in to what the local residents are saying and make those difficult changes alongside thinking of fresh new ideas, right, for different products, tourism products that are attracting different types of visitors to these places, but really looking at quality versus quantity in that. So, you know, I think Oregon and Colorado also offer real compelling models for destination marketing and management that could help to inform the thinking as well in Wisconsin and Minnesota.
All right. We've been speaking with Jevat Tolson, Professor of Tourism Studies and Management at the George Washington University School of Business in Washington, D.C., and Seleni Matus, Executive Director at the George Washington University International Institute of Tourism Studies. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Robin.
Thank you, Robin. It's great discussion.
Coming up, recovery gets a musical celebration.
Well, she said, slow down. Now maybe running low now. Then you said you wouldn't go now.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Recovery from drug, alcohol, and other addictions is serious business, and for all of us, not just those immediately affected. And successes, even small ones, are worth celebrating. That was the impetus behind the Concert for Recovery held on Harbor Drive in Duluth last Saturday, just before the close of National Recovery Month. It was conceived and organized by the Non-Denominational Treatment Center, Duluth Bethel, which is celebrating nearly 150 years of operation. I caught up with this executive director as the show was about to begin. We are speaking with
Dennis Cummings, executive director of the Duluth Bethel Society in Duluth.
And why are we here?
Well, today we're here for the people in recovery, the families, the support systems, to remember maybe people that we've lost due to recovery, but to celebrate people that have found recovery and to know that recovery works and that this is a community process. So today is a celebration. On September 6th, Duluth Bethel turned 148 years old. That's a long time of continuous service in this community. And we just really wanted to take a day to recognize everybody who's played a part in people's recovery, for the people in recovery, and again, the families and support systems, and that's what today is about.
Now, Bethel, it sounds like it has a religious bent to it. Is it open for anybody?
It is. We're secular, and but the Bethel's mission is deeply founded in spiritual principles. We use a variety of methods, methodologies. What works for people works. And it's that faith that's helped carry us through all those years of service and the strength and the support of the community around us.
So the methodologies are not necessarily religious.
Correct.
And so the concert, how did you, why a concert?
Well, I think for, I'm a person in recovery. And when I first got sober, oftentimes addiction was referred to as either alcoholism or other, I guess, phraseology. And they coined it the disease of feelings, the feelings disease. And people drink and use sometimes to hide and cover emotions or to not want to feel or experience in what they're doing. And music is a phenomenal healer. And I think we've reached a place where all treatment centers and agencies, we all do very good work and working hard to help people, give the tools, educate them on things that will help them to find a good support network and sobriety and recovery. But people also need a time to heal. And music is such a phenomenal healing force for people. And
can we get addicted to music, though? You know, that's the whole thing about substituting one for another.
We certainly can. But
I'm being facetious. Sure, I would love. I am addicted to music.
but it's a very good point. And when you think about alcoholism, and when people drink, but when people use drugs, they're actually committing felonies oftentimes to commit. So if we're going to switch or trade addictions, what a wonderful one to trade for is music. And I'll tell you, in my early recovery, when there were places I couldn't find comfort, I found comfort in music. And we hope that we can help deliver that for people today.
And how did we choose the bands? Or did they choose you?
I think it was a combination of all that. This started as an idea. People came on board. We got started late in the year because of the COVID and the impact. And people have just really wanted to be a part of this. Our hope and intent is to grow this event, to move it to Bayfront Festival Park. We're very grateful to the mayor, the city of Duluth, to Jeff Stark and Dan Hartman at the deck, this opening of the new venue and a gateway maybe to the Bayfront. And
this new venue is Harbor Drive. We're looking at the lift bridge going up right now, by the way.
Raising people's spirits, I guess. We're using the lift bridge to raise people's spirits. So this is a phenomenal venue. And the bands have all, in some way, shape, or form, they've sharpened their pencil, they've juggled their schedules. People just want to be a part of this. And so this is a starting point, and we hope it to grow from here. And we thank everybody in the community who's helped support and sponsor this.
Are some of the band members, I asked this question, I know what the answer is, personally vested? There's no shortage of people who've used various substances and then, you know, creative people, let's put it that way.
I don't know of anybody in the community that hasn't been touched or affected by either substance abuse or mental health, and that includes members of the bands. And some of the members in the bands that we have even work for various helping organizations that are in the service industry, and so it's personal for a lot of people. It's personal for me. Virgil Caine is going to come on stage in a little bit, and my father passed away with 29 years of sobriety. I'm a person in sobriety. My dad's first name was Virgil. As it turns out, my dad played the harmonica, and the lead singer in Virgil Caine plays the harmonica, and my dad's harmonica is going to be blown on stage at the first ever concert for recovery in Duluth.
All right, well, let's hear from Virgil Caine, and that's Virgil Caine, the Twin Ports band, not the person, the band being named for a person in a Joan Baez song, and let's listen for your dad's harmonica.
Afternoon, everybody, we're Virgil Caine.
Hey, you.
Good to see so many good, happy people out here today. We've been riding down the highway, we've been some small town. We were rocking in a row and we were laying it down. Head explode. When my eyes are bugging out, tongue is dry as a bone. The fellas that we saw were pretty far from home. They were from the planet of the blues. Yeah, from the planet of the blues. We'll be right back.
stay. I keep my eyes on the sky in case they come back and play.
And that was the band Virgil Caine, the very first performer at the very first Concert for Recovery, sponsored by Duluth Bethel, which has just celebrated its 148th year of providing services for recovery, including drug and alcohol treatment and much, much more. We're speaking with Dennis Cummings, the executive director of Duluth Bethel. And tell me, your services are not limited to Duluth, right?
The Duluth Bethel actually serves the entire region of the state of Minnesota. And, Superior, people from Duluth never cross the bridge of Superior, vice versa. And substance abuse issues always stop at the border, so.
We've got no substance abuse problem in any part of the state of Wisconsin, right?
I live in Superior. My roots are in Superior. And interestingly enough, I owned my first saloon when I was 24 years old, and I think it was maybe perfect training for the job I'm in. I'm grateful to be sober. I'm grateful to have recovery and the people around me. I'm grateful for this event and everything. And Duluth, Superior, Northwest Wisconsin, the Arrowhead region, we provide services to those in need. And if Bethel can't, we work very hard to connect people to the services that will match their level and needs of service, because we're not equipped to serve everybody. And so that's the community part of this, and that's why we think this is such a great venue to bring the community together. Our hope is to turn Bayfront Festival Park into an annual national event that will celebrate recovery, and to not be a commercial for treatment centers or vendors, but to just to be a day of celebration for those in recovery, for all the people affected by recovery, mental health, substance abuse, the families and friends and support systems, and say, this day is for us, this day is for you, for them.
All right, well, let's hear another band. And how about a band with the name, a band called Truman?
Slow down. Now maybe running low now. And you said you wouldn't go now. But not while I'm watching. I thought I'd be a main man. At least that was my plan. Now it's not so hard to understand. Now that I'm watching. Sometimes we go fall down. It's hard, you hit sometimes, you never get turned around. Or in the dream, well, it don't seem like they're ever gonna leave the ground. Sometimes we go smarter, but no one bargained. didn't hit this close when it's gone. Now it's gone. So I give you the lowdown that you may just want to slow down and hold on to what you know now. But just so you know, so you know, sometimes we thank you very much. That's our one slow song.
And that was a band called Truman, and that's their name, at the Concert for Recovery, put on by Duluth Bethel, which just last month celebrated 148 years of providing substance abuse services for the area, the entire Twin Ports today. Those services are provided non-denominationally with no religious affiliation. We're speaking with Dennis Cummings, the executive director of Duluth Bethel. Dennis, you were describing substance abuse earlier, and there could be a lot more to it than the addiction itself.
Driving. You know, Superior may be right over the bay, but you can't just get over that bridge if you can't drive.
Correct. Some people get charged for, you know, operating while intoxicated or driving while intoxicated. So we try to funnel those people into the services that match them, as do all the providers in the region, and we all work together. And I think that's why Duluth and Superior in particular has for many years been perceived as having this extraordinary, really strong recovery community. And I can go back maybe 10 or 15 years, and between Duluth and Superior, there was about 132 support meetings a week. Recovery works, and if you look for it, it's out here, and we're waiting for you.
And where do we find you? What's your, you got websites, phone numbers?
The Duluth Bethel website is www.duluthbethel.org, but I would encourage anybody in any area level of service to dial 211 to the United Way, because they can direct you into any treatment services, detox, emergency room service, housing, personal needs, emergency needs. They're a one-stop shopping directory. They do an incredible job and work with all the agencies. And so that's what today is about, unifying everybody and recognizing we're all stronger together than apart.
Great. Is 211 good on both sides of the bay?
Yes, it is.
Great. And your address, too?
Our address is 23 Masaba Avenue. It's the big stone building on the corner of Masaba Avenue and First Street. The building was built in 1912. It's a phenomenal history. It's a phenomenal experience to work there. I tell people you can't stand in the hallways for 10 minutes and not have a miracle walk by in front of you. And we're here to celebrate and rejoice for the people that have found that new freedom.
All right, let's enjoy it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me very much.
And we'll take it out with South of Superior, who I'm going to call the area's best cover band, with the Beatles tune on an appropriately hopeful and inspirational note.
Here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun, and I say, it's all right.
Coming up, the regional news and review.
Sun.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hey, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Brooks, the big news this week is the Enbridge Line 3 project, not the efforts to stop it, but that has finally been completed.
It is the end of Enbridge Line 3 saga, somewhat, as oil through the pipeline will start flowing slowly but surely over coming weeks. Enbridge said this week that it will begin Friday, today, after 9 months of construction, 6 years of battling state regulators, and $3 billion of investment building one of the largest pipeline projects in the world, frankly. So it's going to carry 760,000 barrels of oil per day at its peak when it ramps up fully, which would be a big boost for the earnings for Calgary, Alberta, based Enbridge, and they say a boost for refiners and others in the region who need the oil. Opponents, of course, have vowed to continue pressing their legal case against it and still hope that there is a chance the courts could shut down the pipeline. But for now, this is closing a chapter on a very long saga that has pitted Indigenous and environmental groups against this Canadian oil company, framing the fight in terms of climate change and threats to Minnesota's environment and the nations, the continents. This oil comes from Alberta and ends up in Superior, Wisconsin at the company's oil terminal.
All right. Well, yeah, as you said, it does run from Alberta to Superior via Minnesota. How about us drivers trying just to get between Duluth and Superior?
Well, we're going to wish we had a pipeline because it's going to get a little trickier over the next couple of years. The newest phase of the $343 million project to remake the messy can of worms highway interchange on the Duluth side is going to cause some detours for those on the Duluth and Superior side. So those looking to take the Blatnik Bridge across should be looking at the Garfield exit to get both on and off, frankly, as there is going to be some detours, closed bridges, and some ramp deconstruction going on in coming years. Mostly, those looking to get across should just stick to the Bond Bridge. MnDOT says that there's going to be plenty of room. It's not going to overburden the bridge with traffic, but it is going to probably cause an increase by a minute or two. Folks commute in the morning and the afternoon. The project should be done by fall 2023, and mostly done, that is, and fully completed by summer 2024. So for the next couple of years, might want to stick to a new route getting to and from Superior and Duluth.
All right. Well, if you do take the Bond Bridge and you keep heading west, you'll get to Proctor, where there's been a serious end to the high school football season, and not just on the field.
Yes, there is an allegation of serious student misconduct that's being investigated, and no details have been made public about what the incident was or who and how many people it involves. But as of now, the superintendent says the Proctor football season is canceled, and they're saying it was, the decision was not made hastily. They've talked with the Proctor Police Department, Minnesota State High School League, the Proctor Public Schools Crisis Team, and their legal counsel. And they have also said that the coach, Derek Perendo, is currently not conducting any coaching duties. So as of now, no football, no homecoming. Parents and students and other community members are seeing rumors swirl ahead of any potential criminal charges. As of now, details are slim, but we know that there is serious allegations being made, and the police and district continue to investigate.
All right. Well, on a lighter note, last week we had the special about the Packers. Danny, do I understand that the Chargers are coming to Washburn?
Well, not the football team, but yeah, a level 3 fast charging station for electric vehicles went online this week, and that was
much different. Okay.
Yeah, a little bit. That was a public-private partnership between XL Energy and Bayfield County and Bay Area Rural Transit, which is transitioning their bus fleet to electric buses. And so there is a 480-volt charger now that can charge vehicles in about 45 minutes, and it's located near the government center there at the Bayfield County Courthouse. And the installation is part of plans by XL Energy to increase the amount of electric vehicles that are being used in Wisconsin. They have a goal, I believe, to increase the amount of electric vehicles by 1.5 million across their service area, across the country. And this fast charger that they have available, it'll be not only available to the Bay Area Rural Transit, but the general public, and they can use a credit card to pay for a charge. And the rates are right around 30 cents a minute, or about 12 bucks to get a full charge, comparable to a tank of gas. So it's a little less expensive. But, you know, nationwide, we're really not getting there just quite yet as far as electric vehicle adoption. They still make up less than 1% of vehicles on the road. And in Wisconsin, you know, electric vehicle sales have been growing by about 9% each year since 2016, but it's still a tiny percentage of the market. And so I think that's why President Joe Biden has proposed installing 500,000 charging stations nationwide. And the infrastructure bill that's under debate right now would provide billions to help fund that initiative. But it kind of remains to be seen what's going to happen, as Congress is kind of at odds right now with Democrats and Republicans over what to do with that.
Well, as you said, electric cars are supposed to help curb climate change. There's another local project that's intended to deal with some of the effects of weather changes we're already experiencing.
Right. Yeah. There's a project in northern Wisconsin near U.S. Highway 2, which washed out due to flooding over Father's Day weekend several years ago. You know, that disrupted travel for months on that major thoroughfare. And it also sent three times the amount of sediment that normally flows each year into the Chequamegon Bay of Lake Superior. And so this project that a mix of state, local, and federal partners are working on aims to slow the flow of runoff that's being kind of made worse as we see these more frequent intense storms due to climate change. And what this project will do is stabilize eroding bluffs along the banks of North Fish Creek, which flows into the Chequamegon Bay of Lake Superior. And the project aims to prevent 5,600 tons of sediment each year from going downstream into the bay and ultimately the lake. And it was funded through a federal Great Lakes cleanup program known as the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, which has invested billions of dollars since 2010 for thousands of projects just like this one along the lake.
All right. Well, while we're looking at the banks of Lake Superior, a couple of weeks ago, Brooks told us about the algae being in bloom, which is not a good thing. What's the update, Danny?
Well, the update is, you know, for the first time, toxic blue-green algae has been found in Lake Superior waters as part of the bloom at Barker's Island in the beach area there in the Duluth Superior Harbor. But officials are cautioning that the discovery of toxins in this relatively shallow and protected inlet of the lake doesn't mean that harmful blooms are likely to form out in the open waters. They found three different types of blue-green algae species as part of that bloom, and they tested for four different types of toxins, and one of those produced a toxin at levels considered unsafe for swimming. It was slightly above the US EPA's swimming advisory level of 8 micrograms per liter. So the discovery is a concerning progression for researchers, like those at the Large Lakes Observatory at the University of Minnesota in Duluth. But, you know, researchers along with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources are saying that just because we found this here in the beach area at Barker's Island doesn't mean that the lake is doomed, you know, that this is unlikely to happen out in the open waters of the lake because the conditions are much different at Barker's Island, where you're seeing shallower, warmer water and nutrient levels may be higher because it's closer to development and part of the St. Louis River estuary.
All right. Yeah, I do understand that the open waters are a little bit deep, like one of the deepest lakes in the world.
Yeah, but it is one of the fastest warming lakes across the globe, so it is cause for concern. You know, if we start seeing this in the shallower water, you know, as the lake continues to warm, what might the future hold? And I think that researchers want to get a handle on that.
All right. All right. We've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
And Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks, Robin.
You can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport and be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. Next week on Simply Superior, you really meant to fix that broken taillight and then a cruiser pulls you over. But is that really the reason they stopped you? The Duluth NAACP says it's really racial profiling and is calling for an end to the practice. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with more of the music of Virgil Caine from the Concert for Recovery. Stay safe, everyone.
Such as this, you might shake your fist, and you feel it come, it's crying time again. Just like before, you tell yourself it's gonna be alright. Just like before, it's crying time.